So after wishing everyone a Shavuot Tov.
Yeah, it's usually one or the other.
Right. So what I have for you, what I have for you today is a little bit of an insight into what I call labor relations. A little bit of Choshen Mishpat, monetary law, business ethics, Jewish business ethics.
And it's because of the whole cows.
And, yeah, the cows and the thing. So what I'd like to focus your attention on is a Gemara in Bava Metzia. Now, just by way of introduction, this will be the first source on your page. We're talking about a person who was hired for a certain work, a specific piece of work. And the balabayit who hired him may or may not be able to provide that worker with the work that he agreed to. So for example, let's say in an agricultural society, you hire someone to irrigate your field, and lo and behold, there's a mabul mayim, you know, all of a sudden tons of rain come down, and there's no need to irrigate the field. Mm-hmm. So the question is the following. Does the employer have to pay the employee because they agreed that he would do this work? But on the other hand, there's no work to be done. Okay, that's one case. That's the first case, which Gemara says is in this case, the employee, he takes the loss. Why? Because there was no negligence on the part of the employer. He didn't anticipate this, you know, this rainstorm. And therefore, you cannot hold him responsible that as a natural result of what occurred, he can't provide the work. The Gemara has a second case where the assumption is that the balabait could have anticipated that the water would come. It's a certain river that overflows, you know, the water overflows the banks of the river. And therefore, since the balabait hired him to water the field, and he never made a stipulation, he said, well, if, you know, the riverbank overflows, therefore I'm not going to hire you. Mm. And the assumption was he took upon himself an absolute commitment to pay the workers. Now, here's the third case. What happens in a case where you hire a worker to do a job, and he finishes the job in the middle of the day? What would you say about that? In other words, I'm going to pay you for a job that normally would take a full day, and therefore I want to give you a day's wages. Mm-hmm. You, as a worker, finish the job in the middle of the day. So there are two ways of going here. One way of going is to say, well, the balabayit hired him for a full day's work. He's got to provide him with work for the full day. And if he can't find this work, because this work was completed, let him find another work. The other way is to saying it, look, I hired you for the job, and even though we agreed, we stipulated a price for the full day, the job was done, and I don't have to pay you beyond that. So let's take a look at Rava. Now, we're learning a Gemara now at the end of the sixth parak of Bava Metzia, and we're going to try to get a little bit of a taste of what's going on here. The Gemara, on the photocopied page that you have, if you count up from the bottom of that first source on your page, count up from the bottom 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lines. And it says, V'amar Rava. Haiman di'agar agure, he hired Paalim la'avidita, for a certain piece of work. Vishalim, they completed avidita, that work, bepalga diyama, in a half a day. So what's the deal? Does the balabait have to pay for the balance of the day? The work is done. And Rava says the following. E isle avidita, if he has another job to be done, then he's got to provide the worker with the opportunity to do the other job, and he'll pay him the full day's work, the full day's salary, because the worker is providing him with a second work. So let's take the following example. Let's say I hire someone to plow my field. You know, back in the Gemara's time, it was an agricultural society. So he completes the job, the task of plowing the field, at 1 in the afternoon. I'm paying him for a full day's work till 9 to 5. So what do I do with the balance of the 4 hours? So I can now give him what's called nikush. Nikush means to remove the weeds. Weeding the field. In fact, that's a lighter job. It doesn't require so much physical effort. Alternatively, I can offer him a different field and he could do the plowing, the charish of the other field. And therefore, the laborer has the upper hand here to demand that the Baal Bayit provide him with other work. The Baal Bayit can't say to him, well, look, you know, I'm not going to pay you for the balance of the day because you finished the job that I intended for you. No. Says Rava, since he hired him for a day's work, he's going to have to pay him for a day's work. The Gemara is not going to be too happy about this, but that's what Rava says. So let's read Rava inside. Rava says the following. If he can provide the worker with a task that's nichale mine, it's easier, it's lighter, it's more comfortable. That's like if you go from Harisha down to Nikush, you're going down to a lighter kind of work. Then Yoivle, that's what he could do. He could say, I'm not going to pay you for just sitting around idly. I'm going to pay you a few days' wages, but you have to do another job for me. Inami, or a second possibility, Dekavasa, or it's equal in its difficult, in its koshi. The koshi means how much effort he has to put in. Mifkad luhu. He could demand of the worker that he complete the day with that work. But Dekashamine, if he wants to give him a heavier duty, a more intensive kind of work, like for example, let's say you have a person who's in charge of running the office, and then you tell them, well, you finished midday, now I want you to clean the floors, you know, that expends a lot more effort. Lo mifkid lahu, he cannot demand that kind of a work. And therefore, v'nosein lahem scharam mishalem, he has to give a full payment for the entire day. Why? Because he couldn't provide him with alternative work that would be either equal or less than the work that he was hired for.
Is it chal on the guy to go to the employer and say that he's...
Oh, excellent question. Excellent question. So we'll come to that hopefully in a few minutes. Now I'll tell you why the Gemara is not happy with Rav. The Gemara says, V'lesev lehu kipoel batel. Why is it the responsibility of the employer to pay the full day's wage if he can't provide work for him for the balance of the day? Instead of paying the full wage, let him pay him on a different scale. There's another scale which is called Kipoel Batel. What's Kipoel Batel? Anybody have a clue? But the word batel means when he's sitting around idly. He's doing nothing. Now, the salary, the wage, it reflects two different variables. One variable is the time that the laborer is committed to give to the employer. And the other variable is the amount of work and effort that he has to put in. Now, if midday the laborer finished the job, right, the poel has completed the task, now the Baal HaBayis has no other alternative work to provide for him because he has something that's heavier duty and he can't commit, he can't compel the worker to put in that heavy duty work. He's only hired for a lower echelon kind of work. So in that case, since the Baal HaBayit doesn't have anything to provide for him, there are no jobs for him to do, says the Gemara, why does the Baal HaBayit have an obligation to pay him for the balance of the day? Even if he hired him for the entire day, half the day, the laborer is sitting around idly. You know, he's drinking his coffee, and of course, we've never seen this here in this organization or any other work. But he's, you know, he's sitting back and taking it easy, you know, smoking a cigarette
listening
to Shia. Right? Hopefully, that's we'll talk about that later. Actually, listening to Shia, but he's having a great time and he's idle. So the Gemara says, in that case, why does the Baal HaBayit have the responsibility of paying for the full day's work? That wage, as we said before, comprises another variable, another element. Yesh kan b'china nosefet. Namely what? The amount of effort he's going to do. Now, if the effort is less, In this case, he's doing no effort at all. He's sitting around, as we said, reading the, you know, he's reading the Yedioth or whatever newspaper he likes.
He's guaranteed a full day's work of full salary.
So he's guaranteed a full day's work of salary with the work. Do you understand? He's not doing the work.
He's guaranteed the time, he wasn't guaranteed the work.
He's not guaranteed the work for the entire day. What he is guaranteed is to pay him a wage for the entire day, but that wage should reflect a fair salary. And the fair salary means because of the work that he provided. If he didn't provide a full day's work, then the Baal Bayis should only have to pay him kipoel batel. Now, how much is kibbol batel? What you try to calculate, again, this may depend on different countries and different societies, but you figure out how much a person would be willing to take in a salary just to sit around doing nothing, which means he can't take on another job, but on the other hand, he doesn't have to expend all that effort. So let's say it's half a salary. I'm just throwing out a number. It's probably more than half, but...
So you just give numbers. If it was $10, it's $10 an hour versus hourly wage, and then for plowing, he charges $10 during that hour, and if he's planting seeds, then it's, you know, $9, and if he's doing...
Nothing, then you pay him $5.
No, but nothing is zero. $10 is just for the time, and then on top of that time, that hour, whatever you're doing in that hour is...
Another time.
Oh, you only hired him for 1 hour?
Let's say for a whole day.
If you hired him for a whole day, then it doesn't go down to zero, the Gemara says. It goes down to five.
So let's say it's $10 an hour.
Right.
Just for the time. So you pull a bottle, it's $10 an hour.
Right.
Just to get me in the door.
Right.
And then once I'm here, if you want me to do...
X, you'll pay me.
Weeds is $15 on top of that. And plowing is $10 and... Right. Seeds is $5, and that's
so let's say he did 5 hours worth of plowing. You're going to pay him five times, let's say 20, you'll pay him 100. For the rest, the balance of the day, let's say for the next 4 hours, you'll only have to pay him, in the Gemara's Kasha, 4 times 10, which means another $40. So for the first half of the day, he made a full $100. For the second half of the day, he's going to only be paid $40. That's the Gemara's Kasha. That's called Kipoel Bata.
But again, the Poel could have gone somewhere else.
Well, no, if he can still get a job at that point, then he has to get a job at that point. But if he can't get a job at that point, nobody wants to hire him midday, then he could demand his salary, because like you say, he gave up that time, he committed himself. But on the other hand...
Or even he went all the way to one side of the area to go to one field, and the other jobs are on, you know, the other side of town, you know?
Yeah, let's... If the Pole could get another job, and it's reasonable to expect that he get another job, then that's what he has to do. But if, on the other hand, he, you know, this is what he has, then the Gemara thinks, and this is the argument to the Gemara, pay him kipol bot.
And the goal here is fairness?
Or what do you say?
Is the goal here to be fair to both parties? Is the goal to, like...
The goal is to be fair to both parties. In other words, on the one hand, the Baal HaBayit wanted to get work from him. He's paying him for his pu'ula. On the other hand, there's an element of time in which the Baal HaBayit owns the time of the worker for that hour, for that day, and he has to pay for that. The Gemara thinks that the balance between these two polar extremes, the fair amount in the middle, is kipoel bato, which, as I say, is a scale that might shift from country to country and from society to society.
Right, and we are assuming this is kind of a bidyevet situation. It's both the fault of the owner and the poel that they didn't estimate the work properly.
Correct. So the Gemara says that Rava was talking to his workers in his city, and in that situation he had to pay, the Baal HaBayit had to pay the full salary. What was unique about the workers in Rava's city? Kika Amar Rava, and there I underlined it, you see, Bachshule, Bachlushe de Mechoza. Now Mechoza is the name of the town where Rava lived in. It's quoted all over Shas. What does Achlushe mean? Rashi says the following. If you take a look on your right side, Rashi says, "B'mechuza shu iro shel Rava, hayu bnei adam harigilim laseit masaot." How would we call these guys in modern Shleppers. Hebrew today?
Shleppers.
Yeah, in Yiddish called schleppers, and in modern Hebrew,
the movers.
Ovala.
Yeah, sabalim. I would say, right? These are sabalim. Now it's interesting. Rashi thinks that sabalim like their work. What does it mean they like their work? Nobody likes their work, right? But what it means is that the actual work provides them with energy. It's an exercise. It keeps their muscles in tune. Again, Rashi doesn't say all this. So Rashi, what does Rashi say? Rashi says, "Regilim la seit masaot tamid." You know, these guys really schlep the whole day. They're working very hard. Ukshiosh, like they're wet, like weightlifters, right? Ukshiosh vim b'teiliv kashale.
They're losing out by not working.
Exactly. Here's someone who loses out by not working. Says Rava, in this case, the Baal Bayit has to pay him for the full day because the worker loses out by not working. It's like a paradoxical situation. Imagine, again, I don't know beans about your area here in Glide, but imagine a person who's a computer, what, a programmer? I don't know, give me an example. And his mind is constantly working. And you would think, well, you know, it's good to take a break. Well, maybe, yeah, for lunch to hear a shiur, but for long periods of time, for hours on end, it's not good for that person. The person gets sharper and sharper, more developed, more fine-tuned as the person works.
I say that's true.
It's hard to measure me on an hourly basis, but if you look at, you say, if you were to pay me a year, my full salary for 3 years to not write a single line of code versus developing my skills over 3 years, as I'd come out with 3 years of experience, I'd be more valuable as a worker.
Right.
You can measure that. Say 3 years of being of work experience versus 3 years of sitting around playing video games and getting paid for it.
Right. You'll get into it.
How could the Gemara verdict on something so subjective?
It's not so subjective. You can't look at certain market forces. I mean, this is very practical when you come to, like, you have, like, a wedding and you already rented the hall and then you, like, cancel on the last minute. So on the one hand, you say to them, like, why should I pay the full price? You don't have to cook all this food. You don't have to hire all these waiters. You don't have to do all this thing. On the other hand, they could say, look, you know, it's not like had you not booked me, we would have been working tonight. It's not like we would have been empty.
Now, ultimately, Michal, the final decision is going to be in the hands of the court. And not only that, I should have said this in my introduction, all of Choshen Mishpat works with one premise, and that is Dina de Malchuta Dina. However, what we're learning here is not theoretical. Why? Because even though the law of the land has the final word, Bamedvar Mamurim, that's only if the two litigants, let's say in this case the Baal Bayit and the Poel, they decide we want a, you know, just give us the strict ruling and then it'll be determined by the law of the land. But if the two litigants agree to go to a Beit Din and they ask the Jewish rabbinic court to determine the halacha based on the principles of halacha, and let me ask you a question. I don't know if you know how long of an educational period, this is on the side, does it take to train a dayan, a judge who can sit on a Jewish court just in monetary law alone? Forget about
Bizmanazeh.
You know how long the course is?
10 years.
It's a 10-year course. And this I know because Rabbi Flegg, whose son David is married to our daughter Henna, is the Rosh Kolel of a kol for dayanut. No. I don't know the name of it. It's called either Rabbi Flegg's kol or Rabbi Fleischman's kol. Those are the two heads of the kolel. It has an official name, but I don't know what it is. It has over 100 young men, and they're not so young because they're there for a minimum of 10 years. And chances are, by the way, that they're not even accepted to this kolel unless they already have smicha from the rabbanut, which is probably a 4 to 5 year program. That I know from our kol in the ELC. So what we're looking at can be understood in practical terms on two different levels. One is the case where you and I have some sort of litigation and we want to get the strict halachic response. We go to a Beit Din of Dayanim and we tell them, forget about Dina de Malchusa Dina. We have agreed to accept the verdict of halacha. Alternatively, and this is more exciting, that at the end of days of Yirtz Hashem, the Din of Malchuta Dina and the Din of Halakha will be one and the same. Which if any of you know anybody who went to law school, that's called Mishpat Ivri, if you know what I'm talking about. Okay. So now Rava says that the question as to whether or not the Baal Bayit has to pay the full wages for the balance of the day depends. It's not a flat answer. In some cases, in most cases perhaps, it's Kipoel Batel. But in some cases, where the poel is now suffering as a result of the fact that he cannot get get work for the balance of the day, work is beneficial, and being idle is detrimental, he can demand full payment, and that was the case of Rava in the Machoza. And now I'd like to show you how we paskin in Shulchan Aruch. So if you can turn to page 3, if you happen to have page 3. Well, you know what? We're going to see the psak based on page 2. Page 2, if you see the rush, Rabbeinu Asher on the top right of page 2, so he says the following. And do you see where there are two pointers in the rush? Look at the top pointer, which is about 10 lines down from the top of the page. He says, Kol lomde Torah, Domi la achluse demechoza, Shabbatola gorim lehem shichecha v'koved evarim. Now I'm going to give my twist on the rush. You'll decide if you think that's what he's saying. Supposing you hire a teacher. Let's say, for example, you hire a tutor. Maybe your son is studying Mishnayos and he's having trouble. Or he's studying Gemara. He's in his first year Gemara class. So you hire a tutor. And your son, or whoever the student is, it's irrelevant, takes ill, chas v'shalom, and he can't show up for the class. So now you have a malamed, a tutor, who has no students to teach. Says the Rosh, he is going to suffer as a result of the fact that he doesn't have students to teach. Because he fits into the population of Rava, who speaks about those savalim, who lose by not working. And if you take a look on the bottom left column, you'll see that the Shuta Rashba says the following: Malamed Hareu Kechluse Demechuza. And now, if you turn to page 3, we're going to take a look at the Ramah. And the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch, which you'll see, that's the middle source on page 3. This is Choshen Mishpat Simon Shin Lamed Hey Hilchot Tzchirut Poalim. Says the Ramah, and this is about 10 lines into Sif Aleph. He says, Malamed Shechola HaTalmud. If you hire a teacher and the student took ill, B'makom Shu Pseidod V'atzorech Liten Lo Skaro Mishalim. Even though the Baal Bayit is going to take a loss here because he's going to have to hire him for another day, it's irrelevant, says the Ramah. He's got to be paid the balance of the salary. As if he were teaching that entire day. Why? Because a Malamed loses if he's not teaching. Now, I emphasize the word losing, because this brings me back to your question, Aaron, and that is the overlap between two different worlds of Choshen Mishpat. Choshen Mishpat, the laws of monetary halacha, divide up into two different branches, two different worlds. One is called Schirut Paalim, which are labor relations, and the responsibility of the employer vis-a-vis his employee. And number two, Nezikim, which in fancy English, except probably not English, it's probably Greek, is tort law. Tort law means damages. Tort law means you sold me, this is a very famous case in American constitutional law, a bottle of Pepsi Cola. I put the bottle into my fridge and it burst. And my whole fridge got ruined. You know, that's called tort law. Or I had an ox in the Gemara's frame of reference. I didn't guard it carefully. And due to my negligence, the ox ate up your tomato patch. So now I can sue you for damages. You have to pay me compensation. In this case, where the Baal Bayit cannot provide work for his employee, this is the overlap between the laws of Nezikin and the laws of Schirut Paalim. Because by hiring him and committing him to me for the day, now he can't take the job elsewhere, and now I can't provide him with a job, he is sitting idly, and by sitting idly, he loses, and that detriment is what I have to pay him.
You can say it on everything.
Oh, what do you mean? What do you mean? Good. Come on, I want you to say this, because you're going to be mechavi to something that I wanted to say.
That everything, you can say, oh, I sit too much, it hurt my back. You know, people can say a lot of stuff.
Well, again, they have to prove that in a court of law. They can't just say it. Well, I thought you were going to ask me a different question. What if I say to my employer, I always get that wrong. I say to him, look, I got to provide for my family. I got to put food on the table. I'm suffering a tremendous loss here because I depended upon this income. So I want to quote to you, it's not on the source sheets, from a sefer called the Minchas Tzvi, and he writes the following. He says, why is it that the Baal Bayit has to pay the worker if he can't provide work for him? He's not getting work for that money. And if you'll tell me it's because the laws of damages, now listen to this, the most fundamental rule in the laws of damages is called grumma. What does grumma mean? If I take my hand and I bang this table and I smash it, you know, with a karate chop, that's called adama mazik. That's direct damage and you can sue me for that. If, on the other hand, I create an indirect damage, like, for example, let's say I remove a dam that's preventing the water from flooding, and by removing this ma'akeh, or whatever it is, the water floods into your field, that's called grumma. Grumma means indirect hezek. Now, in the case of grumma, the halacha is potter b'dini adam v'chai b'din shamayim, which means that in a court of law you cannot sue for indirect damages. But in shamayim, they'll hold you responsible, meaning you have an ethical responsibility which cannot be enforced by the courts to pay compensation for that which you caused indirectly. Here we're dealing with a case of the court of law that's forcing him to pay. Now, what loss did he cause him?
It was grumma.
It was grumma. Why is it grumma? Because what I'm saying to you is that you're going to sit idly, you're not going to be working, you're not going to be breaking your, you know, thinking hard over the Gemara and trying to sharpen your skills. Okay, but I didn't directly damage you, that's indirect. Comes along the Minchas Tzvi and he says there's a middle concept which is between grumma and Adam HaMazik, direct Hezek, and that's called Garmi. Again, this is, you know, we'd have to spend a good couple of years on this. But garmi, in short, for example, let's say somebody owes you $1,000. He borrowed $1,000. But the only way you can collect that chov is with a shtar, with a document. And then somebody comes along and burns the document. Now, the document is worth zero as paper. I don't mean zero, but very little. On the other hand, the malve, the one who loaned the money, lent the money, is going to take a loss of $1,000. Okay? Let's assume the loan is denying the loan, right? So the Gemara says, Hasorev shtarosov shel chaver, if you burn someone else's shtar, you chayav. You have to pay for that. The full $1,000. So the Gemara asks, but wait a minute, the shtar is worth a pruta. Why is he paying $1,000? So the Gemara says, Midina de garmi. That's called garmi. Says the Minchas Tzvi, our case is garmi. Why? Because by hiring him and not providing him with work, he is absolutely damaging him. Again, it's not totally direct. It's a hair's breadth less, but it's close enough to direct damage to be classified as garmi, and therefore we can make him pay.
Well, why would you say that? It's so much simpler just to say that you hire someone for a day's work. That's it. It's like you bought. It's like if I went to a store and bought a bottle of soda and I only drank half of it. You bought it.
No, but Jonathan, but the premise. Listen carefully, Jonathan. The premise of the Gemara is that I only have to pay you kispoel batel. Right, until Rava comes along with this, well, you caused me to be idle, and now
but that's
I
still poel batel. In other words,
there's no question. He has to pay him kispoel batel.
The definition of poel batel is how much would I have to pay you to sit idle? I'm paying you X to plow the field. How much would I have to pay you to sit idle? And the answer is it's usually less than X, but Rava says, well, in this case, it's actually more than X.
Right. And the Renee, if you have to go, good.
The Chiddush of Rava is that we don't say it's more, you don't make him pay more than X. They can say, no, I'm just gonna pay you the cost of plowing the field. I'm not going to pay you double to not plow the field.
Oh.
So it's still the concept of poel batel.
So here's what I want to show you. Again, I hope I'll find it for you on the pages because there's a lot to go through here. The Nesivos. Okay, Jonathan, this is going to address your question. If you take a look on page 3. I'm sorry, page 4. I'm a little blind here. Page 4. And you'll see on the right column, towards the bottom of your page, something called the Nesivas HaMishpat, which is a classical sefer in many areas of Halacha and Lomdus, but especially in Choshen Mishpat. There's the Ketzos and the Nesivas. So if you look at the second paragraph of the Nesivas, he says the following. He says, on the third line, Dafka kshapoel tovea oso sheyite lo schoro. When does the Halacha, based on Rava, require that the Baal Bayit pay the full full salary? That's only when the poel demands payment. Mitam mazik. Because if you are damaged, I'm not going to just pay you for that. You have to come to a court of law and sue me. You have to demand payment. Oz, kevan shenosin lo kavose o koshemine bo sofa schirus eni ochel tov menu dmei hazeko. If he can provide the worker with other work, it's not more difficult, then it's not mazik. Okay? Abel kshapoel eno tovea. If the poel doesn't demand payment, then mechuyav liten lo schiruso al masha os. So you have to pay him the full salary for what he did work, what the work that he did provide. But eino yochel achufo sheyasa etzlo afilu melacha kiyotze mazeh. In other words, if the poel drops his claim as a nizak under the laws of damages, then the Baal Bayit pays him for the work that he does. What do I see from this Nesivas? How does the Nesivas understand the underlying principle that forces the Baal Bayit to pay, in the case of Mechuza de Rava, for the balance of the day's work? It's all based on what? On the laws of Nezikin. And if it's based on the laws of Nezikin, then you require that the Nizak come forward with his claim. Now, according to Jonathan, as opposed to the Nesivas, and that's what we have to write in a footnote here, Yesh Omrim, against the Nesivas, that even if he doesn't come forward with a claim, he doesn't have to come forward with a claim, because this is built in to the agreement of Schirus. In other words, we can understand Rava under two different ways. One way is to understand Rava, well, you, the Baal Bayit, committed yourself to pay a salary for the full day, and even if the work is not provided, but that's not any fault of the poel, it's the fault of the Baal Bayit, therefore you have a commitment in an absolute way to pay him for the remainder of the day. Or we can understand it as a halacha nezikin, meaning that now that the poel is left idle and he's not doing anything, he's laying around drinking tea or coffee, then he takes a loss, pay him for that loss. And the difference is going to be between A and B, whether or not we require the poel to come forward and make that claim, you were mazik me. Because even if the Beit Din would determine that there was a Hezek here, there's no reason for Beit Din to get actively involved and force the Baal Bayit, the Mazik, to pay the Nizak if the Nizak doesn't come forward with his claim. So for example, in our case of hiring a tutor, the law is going to be that if this tutor comes forward and says, well, the student that you wanted me to teach is not here, I am suffering a loss as a result, then and only then, with that claim, according to Nesivas, will we force the Baal Bayit to pay the full salary. If, on the other hand, we would take Jonathan's approach, forget about whether the Malamed comes forward to make his claim. You, the Baal Bayit, made a commitment. The Halach is going to compel you to live up to the commitment.
Can we get more than the full wages? Because I can imagine the damage is more than,
So the answer to your question is no, but I'm not sure why. Meaning, what we said in our presentation, both the Nachas Tzvi together with the Nesivas, is that there's an integration of two sets of laws here. There are the laws of Schiris Polim and the laws of Nezikin. Nezikin now becomes a tributary, so to speak, an extension of the laws of Schiris Polim. In other words, It's only because of the agreement that they made. That's why it's elevated to the level of Garmi. Had it not been that they made this agreement within the framework of Sklirus Polim, it would not be Garmi, it would be Grama. And therefore, any monies that you claim would not be coming to you. The monies are only due to you under the laws of compensation for damages.
What if I can prove damages? What if it's a very, like, it's field where they say, you know, a base programmer salary, let's say, is 10,000 shekels a month. Right. And then after 3 years, you're going to make 15,000 shekels a month. The army comes and hires you saying, we're going to be guiding you for 3 years. You're going to work each one at a time. You're going to do cool stuff. You're going to come out 3 years of experience. You get there, your project gets canceled.
No, that would never happen in Saul. Never.
You got to do Abudot Rasar. You got to do Shmirah. You're not getting out of the.
You're cleaning up the base.
You're going to come out of here with 0 years of experience. You're going to go start at 10,000 shekels salary, not the 15.
So that's grama. What undermines the grama halacha is chirut pol. That this was the amount of money that I agreed to pay. If you would have a case that as a result I caught, you know, pneumonia, chas v'sholom, and I have to pay, you know, damages of thousands, that would come under grama. The top ceiling of funds that the poel could collect, could sue for, is within the framework of what? Of schirut poel. So look, I think our time is limited. I don't want to keep you. Maybe you want to bench together. What I would like to say is that the purpose of my presentation today was to give you a little bit of a taste, and give me a little bit of a taste, of the complex laws that govern labor relations. Again, we didn't even, you know, scrape the top of the barrel here. This is just Shin Lamed Gimel. But I just wanted to give you a feeling for what it's all about. Now, what we've discussed is the fact that the Baal HaBayit cannot just change the labor and say to the poel, you know, I don't want you to do this job, I want you to do a different job. The agreement was on a specific job, and that's what the labor is required to do, the poel, and nothing more. We had the exceptional case where the laborer finished his work midday, and then the Baal HaBayit could say to him, well, if you want me to pay you for the balance of the day, there are other jobs that are of equal weightiness or heaviness, that or even less lighter. You know, it's from Harish we go down to Nikush. And then and only then can the Baal HaBayit require of the poel, in order to earn his wages, that he switch to a different avoda, a different kind of avoda. But what happens in the case where there was no particular work that was specified within the framework of the agreement? Meaning the maskev, the Baal HaBayit, hired the poel, stam, and he didn't determine, he didn't establish which specific avoda he would have to do. So the first case that we want to address is where the worker starts his day with a light kind of job, let's say nikush, weeding. And that's what the Baal HaBayit asked him to do. So the Rush says that in such a case, and we'll see the Rush inside him, Yirtzeh Hashem, the Baal HaBayit has the right to ask him to do a different avodah after nikush is completed, even if that second kind, that second category of work is heavier and more difficult than the first category. And that's the language of the Rush you'll see in the sixth perek. At the end of Simon Dalet, he says, Avalim sachron l'malacha b'stam, if there was an unspecified malacha, that means he hired him for a full day's work, yachal l'shanos m'malacha kala m'malacha kveda. There was never an agreement on a particular type of work, and therefore it could go from one work to the other. And you'll see this paskin again in Shulchan Aruch. This is on your page 3. And we'll try to see it inside. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Shin Lamed Hei, Sif Aleph, that im sachro stam lemeleches yom echad, he hired him for a day's labor, but he didn't specify, yachal l'shanos m'malacha kala l'kveda. And here the Shulchan Aruch is codifying the halacha of the Rosh, the prince of the Rosh, that he can switch from Nikush over to Charisha. Says the Sma, the Sefer Mira Seinayim in Sifkot and Gimel, Midasachro Stam, since he hired him with an unspecified labor. Harishus biyad balabais. The balabais retains the rights. Litein lo, to give him melacha kveda. Why? Because even though the work is going to be heavy, so what? And not only that, the Sma goes a step further. Supposing the first job he gave him during the day of work was a malacha kala, it still doesn't undermine the Baal Bais's rights to demand a malacha kveda for the balance of the day. That's what the Sma says. Mishum denosalo mitchila kala, even though he started kala with a kuf, he started with a light kind of labor, lo gara. He hasn't given up his rights. He hasn't forfeited his rights to demand a malacha kveda. So this is really a codification of what we saw in the Rush. Now, if you look in the Shita Mekubetzes, which you'll see on page 2, he says, "Imitchila sachro stam umiyad omer lo lenakesh." Is kaven shapirish lo achshav zua malacha nireh. Fascinating. The Shita Mekubetzes here above Metzia is introducing a whole new element, what I call umdana. Umdana means that sometimes in the agreement there are situations that will arise that are unclear, they're ambiguous. They never spelled it out and they never spoke it out. It was never explicated. Here too, he never explicitly mentioned what kind of work he wants the worker to do for that day's work. But what? We can fill in the missing blanks through umdana. Umdana means circumstantial evidence. You know, we see something that indicates. And the Shiva Gubetzis wants to say that if the Baal Bais pointed to the poel and said, here, do the nikush, that's how he started the day, that generates an umdana that the stam was for nikush, meaning that what the maskir, what the Baal Bais had in mind when he hired this worker was indeed nikush. And therefore the agreement is on nikush. So we have here machlokas, let's just summarize, between the Rush, and the Rush is codified in Shulchan Aruch, and the Shita Mekubetzes, as to what happens in the case of Stam, when immediately afterwards, that, again, notice, the Shita Mekubetzes says it happened immediate after the hiring, you know, on the first work of the day, you know, Boker Tov, get to work, here's Nikush, and do the Nikush, he gave him an Avodah Kala, that clinches the agreement of Stam as an agreement of Avodah Kala. However, according to the Rush, since the original agreement that was discussed between the Baal Bais and the Poel was never specified, was never spoken explicitly. Therefore, the Baal Bais retains the rights to a stam, meaning to give him any work that he wants, even if he kicks off the day of work with Nikush. So the Rush is not willing to accept umdana if the umdana undermines the nature of the relationship and the monetary agreement, the kinyan that was made. According to the Rush, there's such a thing called a kinyan stam. And a kinyan stam means just what it means, that the Baal Bais retains for himself the rights to demand any labor from this labor. He paid him stam for a full day's work. You're my servant for the day. I'll tell you at any hour whatever I want. Whereas the Shita Mekubetzes wants to introduce the principle of umdana because he holds that stam is just an unknown. Stam is not a definite kind of agreement where the Baal Bais expands his rights, where the stam is like an unknown. It's, we don't know exactly what the nature of the agreement is, and if immediately he gives him a job, now we clarify what was the nature of that agreement. And this halach of umdana applies all over. For example, we go back to an example from the Zikin. You have two animals standing next to each other, and you come back later and you notice that one animal is lying on the ground with pebbles stuck in its body. It's completely destroyed. And you look at the other animal, which is a belligerent one, who's kicking up pebbles in all directions, even though we never actually saw the Maisa Hezek explicitly. What we can tell by circumstantial evidence, that's called umdana. Here, the Shita Mekubetzes wants to apply the universal principle of umdana, and therefore the stam becomes now a specified malacha yidua, namely for nikush, and that undermines the ability and the rights of the Baal Bais to give him a malacha kveda. Shveda, namely to switch him over to Harisha. Now there's one case, which the Achronim, I mentioned before, the Minchas Tzvi, they agree that it's universally accepted. Even the Rush would agree in the following scenario that we apply the principle of Umdana. And that was where the poel was asked to work for a very long, consistent period of time with one specific work, and that was an Avodah Kala. That's called B'meshach Tkufa Aruka. And the Achronim, the Minchas Tzvi, and others want to say that in such a case, the Baal Bayis has forfeited, he's waived his rights to change from one work to the other, even though he never specified from the get-go in the agreement, the verbal agreement, that it was going to be for that nikush, that light kind of work. It doesn't matter. He, the Baal Bayis, the Ma'avid, has now revealed his intention that he waives his rights to impose a heavy work on the laborer, but rather he wants this work, which is light work, and that is because over a long period of time, again, you have to know exactly what constitutes a long period of time, it was that light work which the poel was occupying in. It means that at some point it's clear what the nature of the agreement was, even according to the Rush. Whereas the Rush refuses to accept the Shita Mekubetzes that if miyad, if immediately he gave him nikush, that sets in stone the nature of the agreement and the labor that he has to provide for him, it's limited to nikush. The Rush never accepted that. It's not the miyad, but if b'meshach tkufa arucha, the work was on that light, on that of the light style, that clinches the agreement and limits it to light work. Now, what happens if the worker is in the middle of a job, he was given a job to do a task, and he didn't complete the task, and now the Baal Bayit thinks it's better if he would do something else halfway through? Okay, so again, if the poel completed the task, he finished the job, then the Baal Bayis has a right, certainly, to demand other works, right? Other kinds of work, and certainly if it's of equal kvedut. But what happens in a scenario where the Baal Bayis decides to change the terms of the agreement in the middle of a job? The job hasn't been finished. And Rabbi Chezkel Abramsky in his Chazon Yechezkel, which you'll see photocopied on page 1 on the right side on the bottom, says, based on the Tosefta says, HaPoel HaSochas HaPoel Lachrosh Lo Yomar Lo Bo V'Nakesh. The original agreement was made on a heavier work, and that's Harisha. He cannot, the Baal Bayis cannot compel the worker to do Nikush, to do the weeding, even though it's a lighter work. If you look at the biur here, the Chazon Yeches on the bottom right, he says, the im afilu achas men kala ma'acheres eino yochel shanoso mimolachto shizkir lo lemolacha acheres. Not everybody agrees with this Chazon Yeches, because there's an obvious cash over here. I mean, after all, the poel was hired for a day's work. He was hired for a very heavy labor. Wouldn't it be implicit in the agreement, Yesh Bechal Masayim Mone, that the Baal Bayis could demand a lower kind of work, namely Nikush? They started with Harisha, and that was the agreement. But now the Baal Bayis has a desperate need for Nikush. Why can't he ask the laborer for Nikush? Now, if on the other hand, this is a very classical case where the poel starts his work and the Baal Bayis realizes, and the poel, let's say, admits, it's objective, that he can't do the job. In that case, even though the agreement was for that specific job, but now that the poel cannot implement that job and bring it to its fruition, in such a case, certainly the Baal Bayis has a right to say, then do a different malacha. The fact that you couldn't do the job, you know, you should have checked it out before and realized it's too tough for you. And if you took the job and you committed it, now you can't. At least I'm going to pay you for the day's work if you do the work. And therefore, the Orach HaShulchan paskins here in Shulchan Aruch that the Baal Bayis under this circumstance can change the nature of the work, but he has to keep it to that level. He can't force him to do a heavier work, a heavier job than he was able to do. And here's another question that I wanted to address with you. So, you know, in rental agreements, we have something called sublet. You know, if the renter can't be there, but he doesn't want the apartment to sit there idly, he wants to accrue some benefit from it, he can sublet it to someone else. What about in the case of a poel? Is there such a thing as a sublet clause? Meaning, can the Baal HaBayis say, look, if you finished the job midday, I own you for the rest of the day, and as we saw in certain cases, I have to pay you for the balance of the day. Can I now hire you out to someone else who needs you for the balance of the day? Or do you have a right to say, as a worker, I agreed, I committed myself to this agreement to work for you, Reuven, but not to work for Shimon? And if you look in the Ramah, which is here again in Shin Lamed Gimel, you'll see, just let's see if we can find it here. Yeah, I'm sorry, here it's in Shin Lamed Hey, that the Ramah paskins, that in this case, the Baal HaBayis has the right to hire out this poel to work for someone else. And here we have a gigantic machlokas, a controversy. In this case, can the Baal HaBayis make a profit on the deal? Let's say, for example, he finds someone who's so desperate, for a half a day's work, he'll pay above the market price. And the Baal HaBayis only has to pay the market price to his poel, but he can make the difference. He can earn the increment. And that's going to be a major machlokes between the Mordechai quoting the Maharam Rutenberg and others. The Mordechai understands that the Baal HaBayis owns this poel for the day, and he can make profit. And the poel has no right to object to such a thing. Now, regarding the case where the poel finished in the middle of the day, and what to do with the poel for the balance of the day, the Achronim asked the following question, and this is what Aaron was touching on before. Can the Baal HaBayis say to the poel, you know what, I want you to recite Tehillim on my behalf, or sit and learn for the rest of the day? So it says here in the Maharam Rutenberg, the way it's interpreted by the Nachlas Tzvi, Ki hamavid harishon rashoy lechayev es hapoel lasos molocha kosha yoser b'tmur b'tosef eschar rak bioso shetach umnus shebomis aseik hapoel. Now, again, the Maharam Rutenberg, we didn't mention this earlier, and I apologize, I left it out. He goes even further. He says, if the poel wants to earn the balance of the day, although the Baal HaBayis cannot ask him at that salary to do a heavier piece of work than was the original agreement, but nevertheless, if the Baal HaBayis is willing to say to the poel, look, you got two choices, either I'll pay you kapol batel, or I'll jack up your wages for the balance of the day if you work with a heavier work than the one we agreed upon. If you do the harisha, now that you finished the nikush, I'm going to pay you, instead of 10, I'm going to pay you 20. For the balance of the day. And the Maharam Rutenberg insists that the Baal HaBayis has the right to demand that. In other words, at the salary that they agreed upon for that day's work, he can only force him to use the balance of the day to work with an equal kind of work or a lower echelon, less heavy work. But if he's willing to pay a going rate of a higher salary and demand a heavy work, that he has the rights to do, because otherwise he's saying to him, you're a poel batel as far as I'm concerned. Comes along the Nachas Tzvi, and he says the following. All that applies within the scope of the umnus of the nature of the worker and what he does with his labor. But let's say, for example, he wants to change the entire nature of the work. He asks the worker to type for him as a secretary, you know, and send out emails. Well, let's say he decides to tell him, you know, to clean up the garden for him, or whatever it might be. In such a case, pshita de lo yachol Baal HaBayis lasol zos. The Baal HaBayis is not within his legal rights to demand that. Afal pish avoda zos yoser kalam yavoda shebikesh menu lasos bavurut chila. Even though he's lowering the level of the heaviness of the work, nevertheless, he doesn't have the right to do that. He can only do it within the context, within the framework of that umnus. So, for example, if you're doing farming work, there are different kinds of works that are done in the farm. You know, for that you have to learn the Mishnah in Shabbos Ayin Gimel of Melecha Sidur de Pas. You know, there's plowing and there's planting and there's weeding and so forth and so on. But to ask him now to be his secretary and type out emails, that's a whole different work. And that is not within the purview of the agreement between the Baal Bais and the Poel. And therefore, the Nachas Tzvi says, Hu adin, shelo yochal Baal Bais lomo lepoel shechozimo, sheyelchu lilmod Torah. He can't force the Poel to go study Torah. Oshara avodas hakodesh v'yishalom lehem escharam. Even if it means he'll jack up the price, he can't do that. And why is that? Because that's not within the purview and the scope of this schirus. And if it goes beyond the schirus, then the Baal Bais doesn't have rights to do so. We saw before, with this we'll try to wrap it up, that the Ramah codifies l'alocha, the Rishonim, the Rosh, and the Rashba, and the Ramban, who say that achlushei de mechuza, in the sugya that we started with, in Asochas HaPolim Adaf Ayin Zayin, applies to Melamdim. And the Sma says that im sochuras ha-melamed l'lamed stam, l'lamed kamen talmidim, rashay l'achlas al talmidim. If the Baal Bais who hires this Malami doesn't specify how many students will be in the class or what level of students they are, the Baal Bais therefore has the right to determine that he'll add to the class or he'll tell them to teach the most challenging class. The Radbaz, who lived about 5 centuries ago, he writes that Socher Eina Rashayla Seis the Malamed Avodos Acheros Sheina Betchumi Suko Mishum Shemaleches Halimud Eina Kishar Malachos. There's no other work other than teaching that the Baal Bais could demand of the Poel. Now, I've mentioned to you the Sefer called Nachlas Tzvi, and what I failed to do is mention the author of the Sefer, and his name is Rav Yehudi Tiach, and this was published in Yerushalayim very recently, in Tafshin Nun Zion. So we're talking less than 15 years ago, and it is still a very fresh work, very profound work in the laws of labor relations, and that aspect of Choshen Mishpat called Schirus Paulim. And in Yitz Hashem, we should be Zolcha to learn all these halachas, Be'iyun, and to embellish our understanding of the entire Torah, but especially of Choshen Mishpat, if we put our brains to the task, if we put our shoulder and our brains to the task. Again, it's got to be a task that's reasonable, and as we saw over and over again, the halachas work to try to organize and arrange a reasonable kind of responsibility of the Baal Bais to the Poel, so that he pays al pi tzedek tzedek tirdof, and we should be zocha to live up to those standards of tzedek, of righteousness, of the ethical and very sensitive definitions and requirement standards of the halacha, Kein Yiratzon. Amen.